Order.
It was a dramatic week in the House, with the Prime Minister, John Key, accusing the opposition of backing rapists and getting away with it, while his chief whip, Tim McIndoe, put his opposition number, Chris Hipkins, and his leader, Andrew Little, in the sin bin with a complaint about them referred to Parliament's Privileges Committee. At the centre of all this was the Speaker, David Carter.
My job here is to adjudicate as to whether the question's been addressed.
But it's more complicated, with the Speaker on Wednesday deciding to hand over the chair to his deputy.
Honourable members, I propose to vacate the chair in favour of the deputy speaker in order that he might rule on a matter of privilege.
That's Chester Burrows, who was called on to rule on a complaint from Chief Government Whip Tim McIndoe regarding claims that the Speaker had shown bias in a ruling he made last month. Lodged on October the 20th, the complaint was about reported comments from Labour leader Andrew Little and his Chief Whip Chris Hipkins about Mr Carter's ruling that a member's bill lodged by Mr Little was too similar to a previous bill in the name of Labour's Phil Twyford and could be struck out if it came up for debate this year. Mr Twyford's bill was defeated in March, before Winston Peters' Northland by-election win gave the opposition hope that its second bill, now in the name of Mr Little, would pass its first reading. But the Speaker decided it was too similar to the original, preventing its progress in the same calendar year, prompting allegations of political bias from the two Labour MPs.
In two news articles, Mr Little is reported to have stated that the Speaker has, quote, a reputation in short order of acting politically in the way he handles question time, close quote, and, quote, National has clearly had a word in the Speaker's ear, leading him to make an unprecedented decision to stop the bill being read this year, close quote, and further, quote, the ruling raises serious questions about political interference.
In the second news item, Mr Burrows said Chris Hipkins had claimed massive political interference in the parliamentary process by the Speaker.
In my view, allegations that the Speaker acts on the instruction of the government and interferes in parliamentary process for political reasons are serious matters that suggest that the Speaker is not only biased in performing his duties but is open to partisan manipulation.
The Deputy Speaker said he had decided to refer the complaint to the Privileges Committee.
Consequently, I rule that a question of privilege does arise from the comments reportedly made by Mr Little and that they may constitute a reflection on the Speaker in his capacity as Speaker. I also rule that a question of privilege arises from the comments reportedly made by Mr Hipkins and that they may constitute a reflection on the Speaker in his capacity as Speaker. The questions therefore stand referred to the Privileges Committee.
Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows and reflections on the Speaker are always treated seriously because, as is outlined in former Clerk of the House David McGee's extensive reference book, Parliamentary Practice in New Zealand, the Speaker is seen as being the embodiment of Parliament, and therefore reflections on the Speaker's character or conduct directly attack the very institution of Parliament itself, and are dealt with accordingly. The other major incident being dealt with this week was the Prime Minister's claim on Tuesday that the opposition backed rapists. It all began with this answer from John Key to a question about New Zealanders detained on Christmas Island.
Well, it's not actually easy because these people, some of them are rapists, some of them are child molesters, and some of them are murderers. And these are the people that the Labour Party is saying are more important to support than New Zealanders who deserve protecting when they come back here. Mr Davis, if you want to put yourself on the side of sex offenders, go ahead, my son, but we'll defend New Zealanders.
Order. Supplementary.
Order. Order. Order! Order! I'm on my feet.
And Mr Carter spent quite a lot of time on his feet defending his rulings, with the opposition infuriated by the Prime Minister's replies to their questions.
I have a responsibility to make sure that other New Zealanders are safe. The people who are in those detention centres have a criminal offence which has seen them incarcerated for 1 year or more, or who have serious character issues. If they actually have connection with New Zealand, the advice from the Australian Minister is a third to half of all of those appeals are being accepted. But I'm sorry, Mr Speaker, I'm not just going to take people back in New Zealand without information, without being able to protect the New Zealand public, and if those members want to protect sex offenders, rapists and murderers, go ahead. I'm not going to.
The Prime Minister's claim that Labour was backing the rapists drew this complaint from their finance spokesman, Grant Robertson.
I have taken offence at the Prime Minister's comment, and I ask that he be asked to withdraw and apologise.
Order. On occasions in this House, and I've been here for heard many rulings and I've given some, it's not a matter of whether the member was offended, it's a matter of whether the House was offended. Then I asked... I don't want to see the whole of this left-hand side evacuated. Members may be offended. Order! I have to judge the seriousness of the allegation, and I've determined that the House should not be offended. That members, Annalise Galloway, I ask you to leave the chamber.
After several of Mr. Lees Galloway's opposition colleagues followed him out of the chamber, Labour's Chief Whip Chris Hipkins made this request.
Mr. Speaker, I seek leave to move without notice a motion of no confidence in you as the Speaker as a result of your rulings.
Today. Leave us all for that course of action. Is there any objection?
Yes, there is.
Order! Order!
That was on Tuesday, and the following day, try as they might, the opposition again failed to make the Prime Minister withdraw and apologise for his accusations the day before, culminating in about a dozen female Labour and Green MPs walking out, dissatisfied with Mr. Carter's explanation for his handling of the issue on Tuesday.
While the interchange between members was a robust one, there was a point at which the Prime Minister made an unparliamentary remark in saying, quote, "You back the rapists."
However, Mr. Carter said he hadn't heard it.
Had I heard the remark properly, or had it been drawn to my attention at the time, I would have ruled it to be unparliamentary and required the Prime Minister to withdraw and apologise for it. Though I accept that members might have been offended by the remark, no member raised an objection at the time.
But Greens co-leader Matidia Ture claimed that two Labour MPs, Grant Robertson and Chris Hipkins, had done that.
And then I raised the exact point of order with you, saying that we took offence to that comment. There was no sooner opportunity to do that. We did so at the time and you refused to accept it.
Mr. Carter said Matidia Ture was referring to a later comment.
I totally agree that the earlier comments, which I quote in my ruling, are unparliamentary. The problem with it, the situation yesterday, is it was 4.5 minutes after those comments were made before any member suggested offence was taken.
The Speaker explained why complaints had to be dealt with on the spot.
It is a matter of custom in this House that any issues such as these, the offence is taken, it must be dealt with immediately. It cannot be dealt with subsequently. Otherwise, we'd have all sorts of campaigns in here with people going over Hansard's weeks and weeks in the past, taking subsequent effects and then expecting a withdrawal to be delivered.
Nevertheless, female opposition MPs headed out the door, led by the Greens' Catherine Delahunty.
As a victim of sexual assault...
Order!
Member, I take personal offence, would like to ask for a personal
explanation. The member will resume her seat. Point of order, Marama Davidson.
As a victim of sexual violence...
Order! The member will leave the... The order, the member will leave the chamber. Our point of order, Claire Curran.
As somebody who has experienced an attempted sexual assault, I take
order.
Meanwhile, elsewhere in Parliament and earlier on Wednesday, a bill setting up a register of child sex offenders was up for submissions before the Social Services Committee. The register would be accessible only to certain government agencies, but the Sensible Sentencing Trust's co-founder, Garth McVicar, called for it to be publicly available.
Protection of our children has got to be paramount. And at present, legislation allows these offenders to operate in darkness and hidden. And legislation is sanctioning that. And I see no alternative, if we are really serious about it, but to having a publicly available sex offender register.
But in another submission to the committee, Wellington Sexual Abuse Help Foundation General Manager Helen Sullivan warned against ostracising child sex offenders.
Because these people are going to be in communities, and one of the impacts of outing people means that they become actually much more isolated in their community. And it's being held safely by people who support them in their community that has proven to be effective in reducing any offending. I strongly do not think that if the register goes ahead, that it should be a public register. I think that could actually be more harmful than it is good.
Wellington Sexual Abuse Help Foundation General Manager Helen Sullivan with that submission on the Child Protection Child Sex Offender Register Bill to the Social Services Committee on Wednesday. Meanwhile, on Thursday, the Commerce Committee held the annual review of Crown Fibre Holdings, which manages the rollout of ultra-fast broadband in New Zealand, and heard from Crown Fibre's Chief Executive, Graham Mitchell, who said that when the rollout was complete, New Zealand would be a world leader in broadband connectivity.
We're probably going to be ranked third in the OECD behind Japan and South Korea. And Japan and South Korea have a lot of what they call fibre to the basement, where they put the fibre into the basement of a high-rise apartment building and then use the existing copper in the building. In New Zealand, we're actually taking fibre all the way to the end customer. So in relation to what they call fibre to the end customer, we'll probably be the OECD leader in relation to coverage. So we will be number one in the OECD on that metric.
And one of the main beneficiaries of the broadband rollout had been schools.
Schools now are nearly all connected in the UFB initiative, and what we've seen there is quite dramatic improvements. The first school we connected is Manaia View in Whangarei. This is a decile 1A school, 90% Māori roll, so very challenged area. Their New Zealand standards have gone from 62% to 92% in reading. As a result of that, the students are engaged. They've disbanded their truancy program. They're opening the school early. They're closing the school later. They're having people from out of zone wanting to come into these schools. Whangarei now has every school connected to fibre.
And that wasn't the only success story out of Whangarei.
We connected one of the Marais there, so they actually built a little computer clubhouse on the site. And how do you know it's successful? Just before they built that, the graffiti was right up and onto the Marai. Since that's been built, there's no graffiti within 2 miles of the Marai. So I think these are really good sort of social outcomes, and the fibre is just a facilitator of that. It's how you build on it, but there are some very, very compelling success stories out there.
Crown Fibre Holdings Chief Executive Graham Mitchell speaking to the Commerce Committee on Wednesday. And earlier in the week, on Tuesday, an Education and Science Subcommittee continued hearing evidence to its inquiry into the identification of dyslexia, dyspraxia and autism in schools, and heard from a mother of a dyslexic child, Nicola Barr, who said the education system should not treat dyslexia as a burden.
NASA have recognised the abilities of a dyslexic person, and it's reported that over 50% of their employees are dyslexic. They are sought after because of their superb problem-solving skills and excellent 3D and spatial awareness. Dyslexia is not an illness, a disability, or a measure of intelligence. It's an opportunity to see the world in a different way.
Nicola Barr with that submission to the Education and Science Subcommittee's inquiry into the identification of dyslexia, dyspraxia and autism in schools. Also in the committee rooms this week, on Wednesday, Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler fronted up to the Finance and Expenditure Committee to deliver the bank's November Financial Stability Report. And elsewhere, Attorney General's Office representatives told the Health Committee that a member's bill in the name of National's Chris Bishop providing financial assistance to organ donors could be in breach of the Bill of Rights Act because it excludes some beneficiaries. The Financial Assistance for Live Organ Donors Bill is due to be reported back from the Health Committee by March the 24th. In total, there were 19 committee meetings held during the week. Also this week, Wednesday was a members' day with 4 opposition members' bills defeated, 2 by the narrow margin of 61 votes to 60, making room on the order paper for 4 new bills which were drawn from the ballot the following day. And on Thursday, the House passed the final readings of 2 government bills. The first, the International Finance Agreements Amendment Bill, amends current laws in order to enable New Zealand to become a member of the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. And the second, the Taxation Brightline Test for Residential Land Bill, aims to tax property speculators who profit when buying and selling houses within a 2-year period. With those bills done and dusted, the House adjourned for the week just prior to 6 p.m. on Thursday. And now, for a preview of the week ahead, here's the Government's Deputy Leader of the House.
The Honourable Simon Bridges.
The House resumes on 17 November. The Government intends to make progress on the Support for Children in Hardship Bill, the Weather Tight Homes Resolution Services Amendment Bill, and other bills in committee on the order paper.
Deputy Leader of the House, Simon Bridges. Parliament's back with question time at 2 on Tuesday. I'm Rhys Lyon reporting for parliamenttoday.co.nz with funding from Parliament.